Since the last 3 weeks, since the beginning of Ramadan, we have been discussing in regards to the life of the Prophet, and we went through his early stages of life, and we came to the time where he is going to announce his mission. And from there, actually, the history of Islam is going to begin. Everything else was a prelude to that. And we will try to do as much as we can in the week that we have left. Then inshallah, in our weekly program, Saturday program, I'm going to continue this until inshallah we can go through the whole history of the Prophet. And it's being recorded, it's live right now, it will be live then also, and it's being recorded so that it can remain as a resource for people to go back and study the life of the Prophet and of the Arabs in those days. Now, a lot has been said and written, and I've been speaking about it in the last 2 days also, regarding the environment and the situation of the Arabs of those days. Now, whenever people hear about the Arabs and about Hijaz, about the people there, they hear about ignorance. They hear about a lot of arrogance that they had. They hear about just the ignorant customs and rituals that they had that were based on no knowledge, that were based on being completely unaware of what's right and wrong. And then we just see an attitude in the Arabs that ignored and just rubbed off, snubbed any sort of human rights or any sort of rights for that matter. Now, as we learn this, it would be completely wrong for us to leave it at that. I mean, you would be wondering that when the Prophet came, all of a sudden said, "Qulu la ilaha illallah tuflihu," say la ilaha illallah and you'll be successful, made that slogan and the announcement that he made. How is it possible that so many people just come about and become Muslims? Right away, you know, a lot of people just accepted. They just attested to him and acknowledged him. Said, "You're right. And we accept you as the Prophet. We acknowledge you as the Prophet." So now as we look at this, we need to really have more of an objective view as to the society. When I say, for example, there was idol worship, there was idol worship and it was rampant. When I say, for example, there are social evils, yes, there are social evils and they're all over. But does that mean there's no one in the society who is thinking, who is analyzing the situation, and seeing that what's happening is wrong? You see, this is what's really not talked about very often. Because when you look at a society, any society for that matter, our society that we live in, there are certain things that are rampant. For example, everyone's involved in it. You know? And it is a norm. It is okay to do that. For example, music. Music is something that, you know, everyone listens to, and it's okay now. Now, obviously, according to Sharia and Islam, it's not okay. But in the view of the people, in the norms of society, it has been accepted as a way of life. And people just do that. You know, for example, many other socially, you can say, wrong things. They're out there. For example, dating. You know, dating is a normal thing here and hence accepted as a way of life. Right? Or, for example, premarital relationships that are between two adults, consensual, you know, that they are. You see, it's an accepted fact of life. There's nothing wrong in that. People just accept it. Oh, it's okay. But my friends, understand this. Just like that, you know, when we look at a society, if something is accepted as normal, doesn't make it right. Idol worship was accepted as normal, but does that make it right? Killing children was accepted as normal, but does that make it right? Usurping the rights of the weak were regarded as normal things, an accepted fact of life. But does that make it right? Just like that, having social evils in our society or something wrong in our society doesn't make it right. It will not make it right. Even if you pass laws for it, even if the Supreme Court recognizes it, doesn't mean that it's right. You can say as much as you want, we have accepted that in our society. Accepting that in our society doesn't make it right. You see, that's the reason why, for example, when we look at the society of the Arabs, and when we look at that, obviously to us, these are like strange things that they're doing. Idol worship, oh, it's very strange. Or, for example, children killing, it's outrageous. But when we look at our situation here, we are doing the same things. We're doing the same things here. Really, and according to the numbers that I've gone through, right, in learning history and how many children were killed, you know, they had a graveyard in Makkah. They still have a graveyard in Makkah for the daughters, for the girls that had been killed after they were born. If ever you go to Makkah, and if I have the chance, you know, take you there, I'll take you there. It's not too far from the Haram. It's right down the street from the Haram. It's a graveyard. And it's walled. There's no entrance. It's just walled all around. It's made a wall all around it, so no one can go in there. Because, you know, I mean, there, you know, rumor had it that, you know, people heard voices there. Right? And hence, they got scared and they blocked off that area. Now, if you go on a bus, you can actually see it because above the wall you can see it, right? The wall is a little bit high, but a bus is higher than that wall and you can actually see the graves inside. That was the graveyard. That is the graveyard. The kids were buried. It's not a big place, you know? It's not like, for example, Wadi al-Salam, you know? It's not like that, you know? It's a small place. So, girls that have been killed and buried alive in Makkah, compared to the children that have been aborted in America, there is no comparison. More children have been killed here in the last 10 years than in all of the Arab history that we have about baby killings. So, if that was an accepted norm, this is an accepted norm, doesn't make it right. You see, it doesn't make it right. So now, when we look at these things, and when we analyze these things, even if they're accepted facts of life and people accept them as a norm, are we driven to accept it? I want you to ask the question yourself. Would you accept a fact that's happening as normal because everyone else is doing it? You see, if you are one of those people who says that, well, everyone else is doing it and use that as a reasoning to do whatever you're doing, it means that you would have done the same things that the Arabs of Jahiliyyah were doing. Logically speaking, right? Because if your whole argument is that, hey, everyone else is doing it, you see, this argument, everyone else is doing it, is what makes people do wrong things and wrong things become the way of life, the norm. Because our reasoning is what? Oh, well, everyone else is doing it. My friends, whenever this thought comes to our mind, you need to reject it right away. I don't care if anyone else is doing it. Is this the right thing for me to do? Let me look at what my intellect is saying, what my reasoning is saying, what revelation is saying. And then I'll make a judgment on that. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't make it right. This is how these bad ideas became a way of life in the Arab world. Now, when such things are happening, people like you who are intelligent and are able to analyze the life that's around you and the situation that's around you, you obviously will start thinking and say that, well, wait a minute. Why should I accept that as a way of life? I think this is wrong. What's happening here is wrong. Remember, it happens. You know, let me tell you a story, you know, how things that are bad ideas become, you know, normal. You know, it happens by repeating it. Right? By repetition. If you repeat something often to someone, you see that they regard it as normal. Right? For example, if you can talk about a Muslim and in the same sentence or the sentence after that use the word terrorist, you see, the people will subconsciously relate Muslims and terrorists as one thing. And if you repeat it so often, it becomes a normal thing. You know? So, you know, and when you speak to a person who's listening to this all the time, they'll say, well, Muslims are terrorists. How? They are. They are. What kind of argument is that? What kind of reasoning is that? How do you know that? Right? Oh, there. I mean, every place you hear, because every place he heard Muslim, he heard a word that is terrorist next to it. Somewhere around it. In the same paragraph. And because he heard that all the time, you see, subconsciously he starts relating these two things and it becomes normal. Whenever you want to make someone just make something normal, just repeat it. Repeat it so often that, you know what, he stops analyzing, he stops thinking about it and just accepts it. That's how you do it. It's very simple. That's how you do it. Now, only intelligent people can look beyond that. People who are critically analyzing situation in their life, they can look beyond that. And that's what we want to be, right? Now, we want to be those people who are critically analyzing everything that goes around us and say, wait a minute, why am I accepting this? Why do I think it's normal? I will not do that. Why? Because I don't see reason for it. We need to be thinking in these terms. And that's why when I'm speaking about the Arab world and saying that they have idol worship, they do this to women, they do this to orphans, my friends, these things became normal not at the outset because these people were barbarians. I mean, really, my friends, understand this. Human beings are not barbarians. They are not animals. Human beings have akal, they have intelligence, they have reasoning. They're not barbarians, but if you train them, they can act like a barbarian. If you train them well, they become wild. Yes, they're not barbarians at the outside. People think. People would know, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. But after a good training and repeating wrong and always telling them that this is normal, then they start accepting it as a norm. Really, start accepting it as a norm. See, when I was young and I used to watch TV, you know, in those days when, you know, shows where I used to be innocent, I guess. I don't even watch TV, and I don't know when I quit watching TV. Can't even remember. But I remember this, right? After a long time, after, you know, I didn't watch TV for a long time. In those days when I used to watch TV, it was like innocent shows like the Brady Bunch, you know? Yeah, look at Brady Bunch, I don't know, you know? You're like, you know, just all like really family thing and this and that, all fun and innocent and all these things. And, you know, you grow up on that, right? Now, I didn't know what TV is, and I haven't watched TV lately on this and that. But one day, and I'm not even talking about right now, one day, About 15 years ago, I was doing laundry at a laundromat, and the TV was playing out there. Right? And I see, you know, for example, some sitcom going on. I don't even know what the name is. And you know what? I'm just watching this, you know, with the rest of the people as the laundry is going on. And I just looked up and, you know, watching these, you know, and these two guys, you know, two jocks, you know, high school jocks, you know, are sitting and talking in the car and this and that. I'm just looking normal, this and that. And lo and behold, these two guys start kissing. And for me, it was like gut-wrenching. I was like about to throw up. I said, what is this? I never watched this when I was young. I mean, really, now I heard it's normal. Now I heard, you know, that most of the sitcoms are like that. And I'm like looking at that, I said, the state of affairs, and we are like watching these things, and slowly these things become a way of life. They become normal. And we let them become normal because we don't speak out against it. We let them become normal. So my friends, when we hear about the Arab world having all of these, you know, bad things there and horrible things over there, these things didn't happen when the Arabs came there and said, we are barbarians and this is how we're going to do it. These things happened over time. They grew into it. They became barbaric. They became wild. They became ignorant in Jahiliya. Jahiliya was not because they're humans. Jahiliya was out of hundreds of years of training. That's how Jahiliya came about. Now, in a state of Jahiliya, when you have ignorance, obviously it's wrong to say that everyone is like that. Everyone is never like that. You will always have individuals and people who think, who reject the wrong that is going on. My friends, in Makkah, while you have a majority of people doing wild and crazy things, building a lifestyle of ignorance, you had a group of people who were actually thinking. Who were thinking and looking at it and seeing it and observing it and then rejecting it. You know, everyone, whether you are a good person or a bad person, in Makkah, no matter who you are, everyone used to go to a salawat. Everyone used to go to this yearly affair that used to happen, a party. You know, it was for the guards, you know, for blessings and all that. People used to pray for blessings, give thanks to the guards. It was the Arab Thanksgiving, right? They had a Thanksgiving holiday, and even Bani Hashim used to go there. They used to go there because of the fact that the term for it was Thanksgiving, and to give thanks to the guards, they used to all go there to the gathering. And they used to thank their own guards there. Everyone used to thank their own guard for all the things that they have been given, the blessings and all these things, right? And they would pray there also. Bani Hashim used to go there. Abu Talib used to take his family there. But obviously the Prophet refused to go there. And every year he refused to go there. Now, obviously not all of Bani Hashim were rightful believers. There are many amongst Bani Hashim who are still idol worshippers, and they used to get upset at the Prophet. Why aren't you coming there with us? So here, even though Bani Hashim, and they used to go there, they did not worship the idols. Abu Talib did not worship idols. He always used to worship God. And it was clear, right, in their habits and their practices and their customs that they practiced. So that was obviously there. The Prophet refused to come there. And the Meccans also knew that Bani Hashim, they have their way. And they knew that Bani Hashim did not worship their idols. Abu Talib did not worship that, even though he's the chief of Mecca, but he doesn't worship the idols. Did you ever think why didn't they say anything against Abu Talib? I mean, if he did not worship idols, then they should have gone against him, right? Why didn't they go against Abu Talib and Bani Hashim and say, you know what? We have noticed you and you are not worshiping our idols. Not once did you come and offer anything to our idols. Not once did they say that. Why is it? Have you ever thought about that? My friends, you know why this is? Because you had in that time, because Bani Hashim, even though they didn't worship idols, but they didn't used to speak out against idols also. Abu Talib never said anything, oh, this is wrong and all these things, right? They never said these things. So, to the Meccans, these people are normal. These people are neutral. They are okay. They're not radicals, no extremists. The reason they didn't say anything to Bani Hashim and Abu Talib for not worshiping the idols is because there was a group of radicals in Makkah who were speaking out against idols. There was a group of radical extremists in Makkah, fundamentalists, who were saying that these idols are wrong, this worship is wrong, and you all are stupid for doing this. Can you believe that? Yes, no one speaks about this group of people. These were the intellectuals of the society, people who educated themselves and thought about things. And then they came to the conclusion that what's happening is wrong. These idol worshippers are wrong. Four people in particular had a meeting at the same party that I spoke to you about. The same party, they had a meeting. Four people. And it's not just these four. There are many others that they influenced. Number one. Waraka ibn Nawfal. You heard about him. I'll tell a little bit more about him also. Number one, right? Waraka ibn Nawfal. Usman ibn Huwaira. Now, mentioning these names, you might not know them, but I'll give some relationships so you can understand who these are. Right? Abdullah ibn Jahash. And Zayd ibn Amr. Four people had a meeting at that party 1 year. And in that party, they met, had a meeting, and in which they decided, they all come together and decide, listen, do you agree with what's going on in our society? And they all said, no, we don't agree with this. He said, are you okay with idol worship? And they said, no, we hate idol worship. I mean, what kind of worship is that? What kind of gods are these that we can go and urinate on them and they can't do anything? These were the arguments were used. They said, I mean, what is this? Our people have really lost their intelligence for worshiping these idols. And they all made a pact that we are going to search for the truth. There is a truth and there is a God and we want to search for it. And they made a pact. And it is not just four. They were much more than that. Many more than that. Who really rejected the worship of idols and wanted to go and learn about this. Now, amongst them, two of them were cousins of Khadija. Waraka ibn Nawfal and Usman ibn Huwaira. Now, who are these people? The father of Bibi Khadija, his name is Khuwail. Khuwail. He has two brothers, one by the name of Nawfal, the other by the name of Huwaira. And the sons of both the brothers of Khadija, meaning her first cousins, are Waraka ibn Nawfal and Usman ibn Huwaira. So two cousins of this lady. They are in this group. And they decide that we are going to go and learn. And we are going to go and find out. So what happened is that what they did is Waraka ibn Nawfal, because of this search for truth and this love that he had, he went to a Jewish rabbi. Went to a Jewish rabbi and he became Jew and he learned the Torah. And that's why you see he got the knowledge of recognizing the Prophet. He went on to become a Muslim. when the prophet came, and his history will come later. Warqa ibn Nawfal, he learned that because that's his search. He went there, he says, let me look at this. He accepted that and he became that. Now obviously, before Islam came, before the Prophet came, the religions that have been sent by Allah through Moses, through Jesus, and even Deen Ibrahim, all of that was acceptable to Allah. That's why Allah used to call them the believers amongst the Christians and the Jews. So who are the believers amongst Christians and Jews? The people who accepted the teachings of Isa and Christianity and the teachings of Jews before the Prophet came. Allah regarded them as mu'mineen, as believers. So these two people, Warqa ibn Nawfal became a Jew, and he learned that, he became a Jew, and that was his path he took. Now, his cousin, Usman ibn Huwayra, looked at Judaism, he wasn't too excited about it. So he went to Sham looking for the truth. He went to Syria, and in Syria, he found Christianity. And he became a Christian. And he lived like a Christian until he died in Sham. The third person that we are talking about is Abdullah ibn Jahsh. Now who's Abdullah ibn Jahsh? Abdullah ibn Jahsh is the maternal cousin of the Prophet. The Prophet's aunt, right, Umayyah, and her son is Abdullah. Abdullah ibn Jahsh is also the brother of Zainab bint Jahsh. Zainab bint Jahsh was the cousin of the Prophet that he had married her to Zayd. Remember Zayd, the servant? He married her to Zayd, and after that it didn't work out and they got divorced, and then the Prophet married her himself. This was Zainab bint Jahsh. So Abdullah ibn Jahsh. Now Abdullah ibn Jahsh, he married into stardom, right? He married he married Umme Habiba, the daughter of Abu Sufyan, right? Now, understand this. This Abdullah ibn Jahsh also was a person who rejected idols, rejected idol worship, rejected what his people were doing, and were looking for the truth. So when the Prophet announced Islam, he was one of the first people to accept Islam. One of the first people to accept Islam was Abdullah ibn Jahsh and his wife Umme Habiba. And these two made the first migration to Ethiopia with Ja'far al-Tayyar. They went there to Ethiopia. Now, Abdullah ibn Jahsh, even though he had rejected the idols, but still he was not convinced about Islam. He still wasn't convinced about Islam, but because his wife accepted it and it went against idol worship, so he accepted it. He accepted it. He went to Ethiopia. My friends, in Ethiopia, the first Muslim migration, a handful of Muslims are there. Ja'far al-Tayyar is their leader. So in that environment, you see, Abdullah ibn Jahsh decided, because he met some Christian scholars there and all these things, and because he wasn't convinced about Islam and he didn't know that much about Islam, he turned away from Islam and became a Christian. In Ethiopia, Abdullah ibn Jahsh, the first apostate of Islam. And when he became a Christian at that time and left Islam, so his wife, Umme Habiba, left him and said that if you are a non-Muslim, I cannot live with you. She left him in Ethiopia and saying that, you know what, I'm a Muslim and I will only be under a husband who's a Muslim. She left him and she was alone there, Umme Habiba. Understand this. Now you see how topsy-turvy things change up. Abdullah ibn Jahsh is from Bani Hashim. And Umme Habiba is the daughter of Abu Sufyan. She is holding on to Islam and he is rejecting Islam. And that too, he rejected Islam in such a way, he led his whole life in making fun of Muslims. His whole life he spent in making fun of Muslims. But who was this person? He was an intellectual. He was someone who rejected idols. Imagine this. So this was Abdullah ibn Jahash. And the third person is Zayd ibn Amr ibn Nufail. Now, who Zayd ibn Amr ibn Nufail? He was, you can say that, his uncle, right? His uncle was very illustrious. You know, I'll introduce him to you soon, right? His uncle. Now, Nufail, the grandfather of Zayd, Zayd ibn Amr ibn Nufail. Nufail was the brother of Khattab, the father of Umar. So, Umar was the uncle of Zayd. Now, Zayd, when he was the fourth person who rejected idols in this meeting, and they say, I have nothing to do with idols, I hate them, and this and that. So, but he wasn't attracted towards Christianity, nor was he attracted towards deism. He said, you know what, I heard about a Deen Ibrahimi, Deen that belongs to Ibrahim. I want to learn where that is. Now, obviously, because he used to speak out openly against idols and all these things, and his wife, whose name was Safiya, would go to Umar, his uncle, and would inform him that, listen, he's not worshipping idols and he has these ideas about this Deen Ibrahim and this and that. Please come and cure his illness. So Umar would accept that and he would come and beat him up. And he was a youngster, and he was beaten up by his uncle all the time, ruthlessly. He would be beaten up by him. His friends used to be like, wow, look at you. You got bruises all over. Right? They used to question him. And he used to say, I don't care if he beats me up. I know that there's a truth out there and I'm going to find that truth. And this was this person. He was like that. So this Zayd ibn Amr ibn Nufail, he went out. Right? Now, his son, you will know him. His name is Saeed. Saeed was married to the sister of Umar. Saeed and the sister of Umar both became Muslim. And you might have heard the story that when Umar heard about this, he came and he beat up both his brother-in-law and his sister. Right? I mean, he whipped them mercilessly, right? Until they're like almost dead. Right? Their story in detail might come up later. But when that happened, right, at that point when he was doing that, this Saeed was reciting Surah Taha. And it said that Umar heard the ayat and then he changed, his heart changed, and then afterwards became a Muslim. Right? But so this is what happened. So now this Saeed was his son. So Zayd ibn Amr, his father, was the one who first rejected idols. And he said, I want to find this Deen Ibrahim. He didn't want Christianity or anything like that. So he went to Syria to study under, you know, monks and this and that, until he came about an old monk who, it is said that this monk was 250 years old. And as he came upon him, he learned under him and he asked him, tell me, who is, you know, I mean, what is this Deen Ibrahim? The monk said, the Deen Ibrahim is almost finished. What are you talking about? He says, but Deen Ibrahim, you know, that is, you know, that's what I want to learn. He said, Deen Ibrahim is finished. But from Ibrahim's children, the last prophet is going to announce his prophethood soon in Makkah, where you are from. When he heard that, he said, then I want to go and be with that prophet. So he was on his way back to Makkah after his journey of learning and searching for the truth, that he came upon some highway robbers who killed him. And he died on the way. And as he died on the way, Zayd ibn Amr, right, died on the way, doing what? Searching for the truth. Heard that the prophet is coming and he died on the way looking for him. The prophet later on made a statement regarding Zayd ibn Amr, that Zayd ibn Amr will be raised with me as a Muslim. Now, did he say La ilaha illallah? No. Did he say Muhammad Rasulullah? No. But Rasulullah is saying he is. Why? Because he had that in his heart to look for the truth and he was looking for it. And Allah will complete the journey for him. My friends, this shows a lot of insight into the society that we're living in. Yeah, many people are doing wrong here and this and that, but there are those who are looking and seeing that what's happening is wrong. And they're rejecting it. Just like the people then rejected what's going on. And these were the people who were waiting for the prophet to come. And when the prophet came, right away they accepted Islam. Right away they accepted Islam. Many youth were inspired by Zayd. Because they said, if a person dies for his belief in Deen Ibrahim, then we also want to know that. If you are a youngster and you are searching for the truth and you go through sacrifices for that, you will inspire other people towards that faith. Just like Zayd did. Many youth in Makkah now were ready. And they were saying, we want to know who this prophet, we want to know who this Deen Ibrahim and the right religion is. And that's why when the prophet came, you had so many youngsters ready to accept. Because of the sacrifices of people who were intellectuals and have rejected batil. Because of them. Friends, just like that, you have here also, same way, people who are looking and analyzing and recognizing what's wrong. And when they're doing that, they're looking for the truth. And they're looking for their Savior. They're looking for the rightful person who will give them the message. And this is where, when we look at the history of the Prophet, we begin to recognize where were the people trained to accept the Prophet. And how were they trained? It took some sacrifices. It took some people to reject the truth. To reject the falsehood, to reject idol worship, to reject the wrongs that were happening in society, so that they can stand up and wait for the right to come. So let us now be the facilitator for those people who are looking for the truth. We have to play that role, and they are waiting for us to reach out to them. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and the blessing and be on the right path. Wisdom to understand His guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us His helper when He comes. Wa akhirat da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.